Today is February 3rd, 1994. This is Margaret Van Cleve. I will be interviewing Lola Collette, longtime resident of Fairbanks. This tape is made possible by a grant from Igloo No. 4 Foundation, Pioneers of Alaska. We are recording in the Collette's home on 3rd Avenue in downtown Fairbanks, Alaska. So your family's association with the University of Alaska Fairbanks goes back to the beginning in 1922, when your father was among the first six professors hired by Dr. Bunnell. What do you remember or remember hearing about those early years?
Well, to begin with, we came up by boat. I don't recall the steamship, but we came up by Alaska steamship to Seward. And I remember that that night it was raining, and my father had some things carrying on his back, and he slipped and fell, and among the things was my doll bed that my grandfather had made for me. And it was broken, not too badly as I recall, because I think that my dad was able to mend it in some way, but I have no idea whatever happened to it. And it also was my brother's birthday, 16th of August, and 22, he was 3 years old that day. And we stayed overnight in Seward, then came on up on the railroad up to Fairbanks. And, of course, we stayed overnight in Curry because that was the only way that the train went. It didn't travel at night much. And then we got to Nenana. We had to go across the river by boat because the standard track just came as far as Nenana. They didn't have it finished to Fairbanks, so we had to take the narrow gauge railroad on up to Fairbanks. And we got there, and of course it was all strange to us, but they had a house for us to live in. It's still standing down at 2nd and Cowles. It's on 2nd Avenue just before you get to Cowles. And we spent a year there. And the first winter was new to us, but we didn't mind it. It was great. We kids thought the snow was wonderful. We had never experienced that before. So we spent the first winter there, and when Christmas came, everybody was so good to us. They were always good to everybody, but especially good to the newcomers, because Christmas away from the rest of the world was different. And I remember they had some little doll fur collars and muffs in a package, and I think I got four or five of those for Christmas. The waterman gave us things, and everybody that delivered anything to the house was very good. So we had a great Christmas. Somewhere along the line, we were given a rabbit, and we had a great time with that rabbit because he kept chewing his way out of his box or whatever we kept him in. Said that the rabbit wasn't supposed to be kept anyway. So that first winter, I went to kindergarten. Helen Wilbur Bell lived across the street, so she took Jack, her brother, and myself up to kindergarten for when we first started. I don't recall how long that went on, but we were able to find a way after that because we knew every direction around town. We could go anywhere. And so then after that first winter, the folks bought a house, and we moved up to 8th and Lacey, and the house is still there. And of course, then I went to school from there the next year, but we had it was large enough. The lot went all the way from 8th to 9th, so we had a garden in the back end, and there was a little log cabin there that we rented out. One of the university teachers lived in that for a while, and I don't recall just how long, but Mr. Marchand was a accomplished violinist, and we used to listen to him practice out there, and we thought that was great.
This was the person that stayed in the cabin?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he rented the cabin from us, and I don't remember whether it was just one winter or what, but we were fascinated with his music.
Well, I guess Fairbanks had a lot of accomplished musicians early on.
Oh, they did. They did. And people were really good. And so generous with their, with their talent. But Mr. Marchand was, I don't know whether we bothered him much, but we sure listened to him without going into the house because we were forbidden to go into his house. That wasn't right.
So you'd stand below his window?
Well, not quite that close, but we'd stay at the edge of the garden and listen to him.
Yeah, when you mentioned going to school, that would have been the old schoolhouse that burned in the early 30s,
yes.
1932. Where was the kindergarten held?
I don't recall exactly, but there was a little building, as I recall, toward Cushman from the main school, and we were in that building. And I don't remember who the teacher was, but it seems to me that it was Johnny Kelly's wife. He was a noted accountant, I guess, around town, and I believe she was a kindergarten teacher.
And do you remember some of your classmates? I guess
some
of them are still here.
Yes, Barbara Lindbergh and Jack Wilbur still around, and Carl Erickson, and there's some other girls too. Jane Runyon came from Nome the second year, but she's not around here. She's in the States somewhere. But Barbara Lindbergh, I know, was one of them, and Ruth Joy, she isn't here anymore either. She's in the States. But there are still quite a few that were in school, and whether they're in my class or not.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, still in the Fairbanks community. Now, your father was working at the university at this time. How did he commute back and forth to campus?
Well, in those days, we did it by walking, and then they had a little car that ran on the railroad tracks called the Toonerville Trolley. And it was just sort of a commuter affair, and they run out to the college and back. And he did a lot of walking along the tracks because that was about a mile shorter than by the road.
And also cleared of snow, too.
Well, usually, yes.
More so than along the shoulder of the road.
Well, and there weren't too many cars running back and forth anyway. People walked. They didn't.
Well, I guess people put their cars up, if they had cars, in the 20s because it was difficult to keep them warm enough.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they had head bolt heaters in those days.
That was a few years later. Mm-hmm. Did you ever ride the Toonerville Trolley?
I probably did. I don't recall riding it myself, but I probably did a time or two.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't out on the campus too much. My mother went out there and did some weaving. They had short courses and weaving out there, and a lot of the women from town took advantage of that. My dad walked out there one time when it was 40 below, and he didn't realize it was that cold, and he didn't have his ears covered. And he really had some terribly badly frozen ears out of that. But he did a lot of walking. In fact, he felt like that was good exercise. And in the summertime, when he would go out in the bush, or I shouldn't say the bush, he'd go wherever they wanted any surveying done. He did quite a bit of that around the area. So,
what did your father teach at the university?
Well, civil engineering, mathematics, anything else that was needed.
I saw in William Cashin's book that Bunnell was looking for someone who could teach French and teach mathematics and any number of things in one person.
Well, he was very resourceful, and he tried hard to make it a good school. And of course, the first year, the six professors sat down with the six students, and they worked it out so that they'd have a graduate the next year. And they did that each year so that they make sure that they could, that the students could get the courses that they needed for graduation. And the first year was Jack Shanley. And from what I've heard, he was quite a character. Of course, he with the three Loftus boys and the two McComb boys. It was quite a circus, I guess.
Did they actually have a graduation ceremony?
Oh, yes. Yes, they had a graduation ceremony, and Jack Shanley graduated. And my father told me all kinds of, not told me necessarily, but I've heard him tell others about some of the antics that those six boys came up with.
They needed a good, strong faculty ratio.
Yes, yes, but they evidently learned quite a bit because after my dad came back up here 10, 15 years ago now. Why, there were still some of them around, and they used to laugh at the things that were done out there at that time. And of course, Dorothy Roth Loftus, was in on that. She was quite a character, too. She and her sister went to school at the same time.
Mm-hmm. In those early classes. We were talking earlier about people coming up during certain periods of time, such as before the war, before the pipeline, or whatever. In your case, you became before the completion of the Alaska Railroad.
Yes.
But when it was completed, do you remember attending the ceremony in town in which the president...
Oh, yes. And it landed all the school kids, I guess you'd call them school kids. It was during the summertime, but... And then we all lined up and we went in and we all shook hands with President Harding. And I'm sure he didn't appreciate too much, but we all thought it was great.
Yeah, it's not often a child gets the opportunity to shake hands with the President of the United States. Mm. This was held over at Weeks Field or it was outdoors?
I don't recall just where it was held. I remember standing in those lines and of course, people kept telling us, now behave yourself, behave yourself. I don't know why. We were just typical kids.
Used to standing in lines.
Oh, yes. Not as much as nowadays, though.
So you were here for another 4 years. So you left in 1926?
Mm-hmm. Yes. We bought... one of Bobby Sheldon's stages. He used to drive a touring car between Fairbanks and Valdez, and he had a regular stage area. I think they called it a stage. And anyway, he ran cars back and forth, and we bought a 1924 Studebaker touring car. And we drove that to Valdez and we drove down to McCarthy. On our way to Valdez, and then we got down near Valdez, and the water was high, and Dad said he wasn't sure just where the road was, but he stayed close to a bluff, and unfortunately, that's where the road was. We got down to Valdez, and then we shipped the car down to Seattle, and that was quite something, because they had those small license plates then. And our cousins in Seattle thought that was just wonderful because nobody in the family had a car. Here came Uncle Archie with this funny-looking touring car and the tiny little license plate. And, oh, they thought it was great if they could just sit in it and pretend like they were driving. But our cousins were living with my grandparents because their father passed away just before the third youngster was born. And so they'd been living with my grandmother, and she'd helped the family out while my aunt finished her education and got a job. So, of course, with those three and R2, we had quite a circus around there. But Grandma was real good to us. Of course, when we got... she had everything there, and she lived right in Seattle, and she had everything in... on her little piece of property there. She had chickens and orchards and berries and a garden and everything. And she thought she was so nice to us because the first day one of the first days, she brought out some eggs that she'd just gotten from the chickens. They were nice, fresh eggs. And she fixed them for us. And we played with the food on our plate. And finally, she noticed and she asked my mother what was wrong. She said, well, she said, we get our eggs in the fall and use them all winter, and they have flavor by the time the kids eat them. And poor Grandma, she said, well, she could leave them a little longer.
Make you feel at home.
Mm-hmm. But it was just a matter of we were just used to the other eggs, and it took us a while to get used to a few things like that.
I guess the boat eggs, as you say, were mm-hmm. 6 months old.
Yes.
By the time you ate them. Mm-hmm. So it was what you were used to, and mm-hmm. so you thought there was something wrong with your grandmother's eggs.
Mm-hmm. They were just too fresh to have flavor. No, Mom used to put them down in what was it she called? Something rather glass. But anyway, it was a silicone, and they can do it here. They've been using it some up here, but not as much as they used to. But she'd put them down in, as I recall, the big kegs or crocks, and had this silicone gel on them, and it kept them fresh. Fresher.
Oh, so this would be in a root cellar or someplace where it was cool but not freezing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we had the basement was just a dug hole down there where the furnace was, and we had room for a few things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know she used to make pickles in those crocks too, and we had our garden, and we used as much of that as we could. We put it, she canned, I guess, most of it. Of course, we didn't freeze things as such then, but there were some things that we could freeze just by putting out. We didn't prepare them for freezing like they do now.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't bag them and all of that.
And there's still, I guess, even then, quite a bit you could buy in town.
Yes. Well, you could buy the essentials. You could always buy potatoes and things like that all winter long. And but as far as fresh fruit, like banana was really super.
Yeah, it cost quite a bit if you did get one.
I imagine so. Well, they didn't use much. They used quarters, but as far as nickel, dimes, and pennies, the only time you got any pennies was at the post office. But most of the stores just threw the pennies aside, and they were too small to use. But, we managed all right with the groceries the way they were. The stores tried hard to provide what we needed, but we didn't have all the fancy things that we have nowadays by any means.
You didn't have to exist on moose meat and caribou.
No.
I guess you could even get turkeys in those days.
I imagine so. I don't remember too much about that, but we ate all right. We made ice cream. That was great.
Oh, how did you do that?
Well, we had a hand-cranking freezer.
Mm-hmm.
My dad loved ice cream, so of course he always had to keep testing it until he got to the bottom, and that on the bottom was finally all right. And then it was gone. He was kind of a jokester.
We were saying earlier that your father, Archie Truesdell, was the first of six professors to come up. And I noticed in reading Cashin's book that Ladessa Nordale, I guess she was Ladessa Hall, was also one of the earlier professors. Did you know her when you were here that
time? Yes, of course. We were just little kids, so we were sort of novelty. But a lot of the professors, I shouldn't say a lot because there weren't that many, but the professors out there used to come to dinner every now and then. And she came, and I know she was a business teacher out there. She taught business subjects. And then there was a Miss Kirkpatrick, and I don't remember any more about her name than that. And I believe she was a home ec teacher. Then, of course, Earl Pilgrim used to come over, too. He and his wife, I don't remember her name other than Cappy. Now, what that stood for, I don't know that. And later he married Marietta, and that's the one that they wrote up in the newspaper.
Oh, in the Heartland recently, yes.
But they didn't mention the first wife, so I don't know too much about her.
Mm-hmm. So your home was the social circle for a lot of the teachers from time to time.
They were sort of everybody was away from home, and so they did a lot of entertaining among themselves and among the town people, too. They weren't as cliquish as they were later on when I came back as a student to the university.
Well, I guess at that time, other than the president's residence, there really wasn't faculty housing.
No,
they lived downtown
amongst
the townspeople, so that would make a difference.
There were a couple houses out there. Let's see, I know Sturgill lived in one, and he was, I don't know exactly what his title was, but he was sort of a maintenance man, as I remember. Then there was, it seems to me there was another house out there, but I don't remember too much about that now. When I came back, there were more houses out there. But
do you remember Dr. Vanell?
Oh, yes.
A memorable figure.
Definitely. Yes, I don't remember him so much about then. I remember Jean, his daughter, because if there are any youngsters around, why, she was there too, but she was quite a bit older. I don't recall now how old she was, but I know that she was probably in high school then.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Bunnell, too. I can't remember her first name, but I never called her by her first name anyway. But, yes, and the president had a nice little home out there, nice for those days. Now it's not, wouldn't be adequate at all. But, no, we used to go out there, too, to activities, and I don't recall now just exactly what the occasion might have been, but I can recall being out there at their home. And she was, and Mrs. Bunnell was very nice. She did a lot of, and she did quite a bit of entertaining too. But they were all a good group of people, and they just enjoyed each other's company, I guess.
So after you, we started to talk about your leaving Fairbanks, your father
mm-hmm.
left the university and went back to, you had come from Seattle when you...
Where my grandmother lived. And my dad had been at the University of Washington the year before we came to Alaska. And his family had moved from Kansas out to Vancouver, Washington. Then when he and his sister finished high school, they went up to the university, and I don't know just when, but anyway, the rest of the family moved to Seattle near the university. And four out of the five of his family all went to the university. One sister graduated in Oregon, but other than that, they're all University of Washington people.
So that was, just before the Depression. So did he have a job?
When he left here? No.
So he found one...
Well, we went out, and of course, we visited the family there. Also glad to see his return from beyond the end of the world. And so we visited in Seattle, and then we went over to Idaho to my mother's family and visited there. And then my dad got a call that there was a job in Seattle, so we went back to Seattle, and he worked for, I think it was a Puget Sound Bridge and Steel Company, but I'm not sure about the name. But anyway, we bought a home in West Seattle. And all new furnishings, because we had we didn't bring anything like that from Alaska. And then we went to school there in West Seattle, and my brother was in the second grade and I was in the fourth, and we weren't too happy about it. My brother used to wake up crying at night, "I want to go home to Alaska." And so then we hadn't been in school too long, and I started to read about Alaska in the geography book, and there was about half a page devoted to Alaska, and one was a picture of an igloo, and the rest was just a little quip on the bottom of the page about Alaska, and only Eskimos and missionaries lived there, and so on, and all ice and snow. And I objected. I said, I was living in Alaska, and I know better, and the teacher told me to read my book. And that didn't sit too well, so I went home and I made them folks unpack the pictures, and I took pictures of our garden and the beautiful cauliflower and flowers and such. My teacher said, "Read your book." And then about the next day, my brother came home and he was really mad. He says, "The teacher told me to sit down. I couldn't sing. I want to go back to Alaska." And of course, we had thoroughly enjoyed it up here. My dad said we got on our feet financially and physically, because my mother hadn't been well, and I don't know, she just seemed to perk up and enjoyed things up here, and her health improved, and so we felt like that the 4 years were well worth it, even though the relatives thought it was terrible. And of course, we did a lot of shopping through the catalogs, Sears and Ward's, and we looked forward to the train coming in every week. And of course, if the boats went on strike, well, that was pretty rough, but they weren't striking as much then as they did later on.
So you did have a lifeline to the outside world.
Oh, yes. Well, that's why they called it the outside, because we were inside and we were right there, and everybody enjoyed it. and it's you're inside all right, but when you left, well, you went outside.
I always thought that was a curious expression. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand what that meant when I first came up here.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you'd been here, you would have.
Yes. In those days, yes, I guess that had
but,
a lot of...
Really, it wasn't so bad. We all managed, and as I say, we as kids, we thoroughly enjoyed the snow. And in the summertime, I'd get nice and hot. We didn't have all the fancy things to play with. They do nowadays, but mm-hmm. we managed. We did lots of things for ourselves. I know we used oatmeal boxes and made cradles for our dolls and things like that. And I don't know, it just seemed like that we were a little more, had a little more interest in doing things than they do now. Now kids want everything done for them.
Turn on the television.
Yes.
Or the video games.
Yes.
I guess sports were quite an important part of a child's life. Yeah. Hockey for the boys, and I guess the girls ice skated too.
Mm-hmm. Well, we skated. We ice skated, of course, almost everybody did. And we were too young to get into any hockey or anything like that. They didn't have it for the younger ones. But we ice skated and had lots of fun. And then we went out to the States in the fall of 26, and Green Lake in Seattle froze over.
So, oh, your honor.
Yes. So we went over there, and my cousins took us over there. And so we put on our skates, and my brother and I just thought it was great. We skated and skated, and we looked around. We couldn't find our cousins. They were disgusted. They were sitting on the shore. They couldn't skate. But we had our problems too. We tried to learn to roller skate, and it took us so long. And neither one of us could catch on to that. We finally learned to roller skate, but of course everybody out there roller skated, but we could ice skate.
You didn't have sidewalks up here.
No, well, we had them, but they were wooden.
Yeah, up here, mm-hmm. yes. But mm-hmm. in Seattle, were they concrete or?
Yes. No, yeah. They're concrete.
Yeah, so you could skate on concrete, mm-hmm. but not on the wooden ones.
Yeah, it took us a long time to learn the one. And, of course, we did well on ice, but we didn't do very well for a while on the cement sidewalks.
So you couldn't wait to get back to Alaska.
No, that was it's just one of the things that we always wanted. And then when Dad had a chance to come back, he sure snapped it up.
Well, I guess by the early 30s, after you'd become reestablished in Seattle, a depression hit, so things
were
tough there. So.
Well, we were in Seattle for 2 years, and then my dad got a job as bridge engineer for the city of Tacoma. So we went over there, and that lasted 4 years. And there again, I had problems in school. I didn't know about any problems that Seattle and Tacoma had, but... One of the first things that we did was to write about one of the nice things that we did during the summer. Well, we'd gone up to Mount Rainier, and I wrote and told about our trip to Longmire Camp, I think it's called Longmire anyway, and a bear got into our food during the night and so on. And the teacher gave me an F because in Tacoma you don't call Mount Rainier Mount Rainier, it's Mount Tacoma. And I didn't know about that. So that was my first experience then, and I was ready to come back to Alaska. My brother, I didn't have anything happen to him like that, but I stuck my neck out right away.
So how long was it before you did get back to Alaska?
9 years. Yeah, we were in the States for 9 years.
So that by that time you were
I had finished high school. I'd been out a year. I'd graduated. Well, and when I got to Seattle, I was so far ahead of the schools that I was sick most of that first winter. I had measles. My brother had them first, and of course we were in quarantine. So then the day he got out of quarantine, I got the measles. So that was a month. And then I had the mumps, and then I was sick with the flu, and I don't know what all, but I didn't go to school much that year, but I was still ahead of the kids. So that was the fourth grade, and then the fifth grade, I skipped the first half of the fifth grade and went into the second half of the fifth grade that next fall. And that finally matched me up to what the others knew. So then I was in the middle there where I changed from the fifth to the sixth in the middle of the year, which is terrible. And so then when we were in Tacoma for that 4 years and then changed the administration, my father was out of a job again, and that was 1932. We had rented our house in Seattle, and the people had lost their job, and they couldn't pay the rent, so my dad had been making the payments on that house and paying rent in Tacoma. And so in 32, when he lost his job, we lost the house in Seattle, and we moved out to an acreage that we had on Henderson Bay out of Gig Harbor. We went over across the ferry and from Tacoma, and it was over by, I can't think of the place now, but anyway, it was on Henderson Bay, and we built a little, we bought lumber to finish a log house that we were going to build, and so Dad used that lumber and built us a little house so that we'd have shelter. I stayed in a tent until about the end of December, and it was pretty cold by then. And so we were over there for, oh, let's see, a year and a half, I guess, when Dad finally got work. And no, it must have been about a year before he got work. And then he worked on a road crew for a while, and then he got a job in Olympia. And by that time, some friends had asked if I would come over and work for my room and board and help them with their family. They had about, at that time, I think 6 boys and a girl. So I went over there, and I finished my senior year of high school there. But I had moved out in the country, and with changing schools in the middle of the year, or changing grades, I had a problem because I had a semester of geometry and a semester of Latin.
Oh, nothing meshed then.
No.
Oh, dear.
So I had to make up the extra semesters, so I was kept quite busy doing that. And we had a car, but we didn't use it anymore, and we had to because we trying to hold down expenses. So I walked to school about 3 miles every day and home again. And then some friends helped us out, and I could have all the cracked eggs and all the skim milk I could carry home. So I went home with a shopping bag of groceries each night, and that helped. But it was pretty slim pickings there for a while. And we managed, though. We weren't as bad off as some people. Dad had a viaduct in Tacoma that he was building, and we used to go out there with him on the weekends because they had poured concrete, and he'd go out there and make sure that everything was all right. There was moist enough and so on. And there was a garbage dump there, and it just broke my heart to see the people in there foraging for food in the garbage dump. But that's the way some of them had to survive. Yeah. So we were very fortunate. We felt like we were really lucky. But then it hit us too, and Mom made bread, and we had bacon for meat, and we used the bacon grease for butter.
A little Alaskan resourcefulness.
Yes.
And probably did help people cope, or help your family cope, by having lived up here and know how to improvise with what you don't have.
I think it helped us a great deal. Of course, up here we weren't deprived of anything. We had plenty of whatever we needed, unless they ran out of it at the store. And then you learn to do without. It wasn't hard.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one reason I don't feel like I'm a real pioneer. We never lived on the creeks where we had to do without a lot of the niceties, but we always had electricity, and we had a honey bucket. That was better than going across the yard to a privy.
Oh, by honey bucket, that means a sort of a built-in bathroom with the honey bucket.
Yeah, there was a door on the outside, and they pulled the bucket out.
How was that handled? Was there a truck that, a wagon that would come by and replace that with a...
I can't think of his first name, but Redding, that writes in the Heartland, was telling about that just the other day. He got a job with Pop Wainer, and they did that first, and then after that they went around and picked up garbage, and then he went to school. That's the way
things were done then, mm-hmm. in the 20s.
Mm. Yes.
And most people had water delivered at that point.
Yes, in the 5-gallon buckets. And they had a stove inside the tank of water to keep it from freezing.
Yeah, that would be a problem on those mm-hmm. 60 below days, which you had a lot of back then.
Well, it seems like it. Of course, yeah. We didn't think anything of it. We just put on another layer and away we went. We didn't have the nice warm clothes that they have nowadays either.
That's true. Yeah. And your area of travel would be quite small.
Mm-hmm.
School was maybe 4 blocks away.
Well, just one block.
Oh, just one
block. We lived at 8th and Lacey.
Oh, your second house was mm-hmm. closer to the school. Mm-hmm. And then all the businesses were on 2nd Avenue in that core area.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you could dash inside when you got to go.
Well, we didn't have to go that far down, though, because you see the school was straight down 8th Avenue. Mm-hmm. And so we were really lucky.
So when you came back to Fairbanks, you came basically the same way, by boat to Seward.
Mm-hmm.
And how did that trip compare to what you remembered of your first trip?
Oh, the boat wasn't going fast enough. No, we were really pleased by that time. My brother had been moved around enough there in his last year, I guess. He'd moved from out there in the on Henderson Bay to Olympia for a while, and then he went over to Cooley Dam, and by that time his schooling was so interrupted, and Dad left in April, and so he just more or less quit school then and picked it up again when he got to Anchorage. The family moved to Anchorage that year, and we went up in July, my mother and brother and I. And then I came up to the university in September, so I wasn't in Anchorage very long, and I didn't know anyone down there. I didn't like it to begin with. I wanted to go on up to Fairbanks. So in September, I came down up here to the university. And
so you lived in a dorm on campus?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the old women's dorm. It's long gone now. It was a frame building. And we had lots of fun there.
Who were some of your fellow students at that point? Any from your early elementary school days?
Yes, because I was with a mix-up in my, not mix-up exactly, but in this changing of my classes in the middle of the year and then having to pick up that extra semester in high school. I got out of high school a year before my classmates here. But with the change of moving around and so on, I lost a year. I went to business college for a little while, and then my mom and brother and I just visited relatives until we could come up north again. So all of my classmates were with me as a freshman out here at the university. There was, Barbara Lindenberg, and Marjorie McDonald, who had gone to school with me. And, of course, I met some others, Helvia Netty from Anchorage and Florence Allen from Haines. Well, Florence was on the train with me when I came up to the college. And we've been good friends ever since. She's Florence Holmes now. And
so you felt like you'd come home.
Yes, oh, definitely.
Although it probably had changed. The town had grown a little bit since you left.
Yes, yes, it had
on
some.
Campus, certainly.
But of course, I had changed so much that it was sort of equal. But at that time, the campus was a community in itself, more or less, and the town was a community in itself. And the town students used to come out on the bus. But there wasn't the interaction that there is now. But the students would come out, and then they'd go back on the bus each each night, of course.
This would be Paul Garman's bus?
Yes. That good old piece of transportation. And
so you'd occasionally go into town?
Yes, we would go into town once in a while to do shopping or something like that, but for activities, we usually entertain ourselves out there. The boys had basketball games, and of course the girls went to them, and we had dances quite often. And I don't recall, of course there was lots of skiing, I didn't do too much of that, and lots of hiking and things like that. The boys did a lot of skiing too, we still have pictures of that.
Did most of the students work?
Quite a bit, yes. Yes, I got a job working as a secretary to Mr. Gasser, who at that time was director of the experiment station, and a lot of the girls waited table, and there were a few other office jobs for them, and Miss Florence Holmes was in the post office, and then they had a little store where you buy little things like candies and gum and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So a student store.
Mm-hmm. Well, they tried to give the students as much help toward their tuition as they could. Not so much tuition, but room and board, as I call it. Recall it, tuition wasn't very high. But it helped to have, I think, as I recall, it was about $60 a month for room and board. The room was $20 and the board was $40, which is quite a change. Of course, that was back in 35.
And you had a central cafeteria for your meals? Or did you have, at that time, a separate eating place for the women?
No, they all ate together in the basement of the girls' dorm. And then they wouldn't have any heat during the summer. There'd be no heat, no hot water. So the minute school was out in the spring, right off would go the heat, and we'd have no hot water, no heat until fall. And when school started again in the fall, well, then they turned it back on. Oh my, it seemed good.
Real luxury.
Oh yes.
So, when you got out of school, late April, early May, it still could be pretty cold.
Mm-hmm, middle of May. Oh yes, we always had a cold spell the minute the heat was turned off. But we managed, and it was always a good group of people. We all were compatible and no problems at all. And of course, in the summertime, we tried to do a few extra things. Sometimes we'd even get a car going and get out to the lake, to Harding Lake, and do things like that. But we did a lot of walking and hiking.